Each area, I think we recognize, is different with specific needs and interests, but it's out of simple fairness that we should provide revenue sharing to all of them.
Senator Murkowski pushes for offshore federal revenue sharing. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 19th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, the meticulous packing before setting out on an ice field expedition.
Everything is extremely organized, so when you're on the field, you don't think about where's this thing and where's the other.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
And by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
Senator Lisa Murkowski wants Alaska to get a share of the federal revenues from oil and gas development off Alaska's shores. Alaska's congressional delegation has tried before, but this time, Murkowski hopes to harness the support of other coastal senators. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, the bill proved controversial at an Energy Committee hearing this morning.
Murkowski's Alaska revenue sharing bill has two siblings. One proposes revenue sharing for Atlantic states. The other would send more revenue to Louisiana and its neighbors. Murkowski promoted them all at the energy hearing.
Each area, I think we recognize, is different with specific needs and interests, but it's out of simple fairness that we should provide revenue sharing to all of them.
The Alaska bill would divert 22.5% of offshore revenue. Most of that, 15%, would be split between the state of Alaska and communities near the developments. The bill earmarks smaller amounts for Alaska workforce development and federal science research on the North Slope. After the first decade, the state share would grow and the percentage to the federal treasury would shrink to 50%. The top Democrat on the committee, Maria Cantwell of Washington, says the idea of offshore revenue sharing remains unpopular with senators from interior states and those who believe the federal government can't afford it.
These are not new concepts. My colleague from Louisiana, I'm sure, knows. But they are concepts that have been brought this committee to a standstill multiple occasions, given a mix of concerns.
Revenue sharing was among 26 bills Murkowski raised in the hearing, all of them candidates for the comprehensive energy package she's working on. Cantwell and other Democrats say they want energy policy to focus more on technology, efficiency, and carbon reduction. One of the hearing witnesses, Franz Matzner of the Natural Resources Defense Council, says combating climate change will require leaving some oil in the ground, and Matzner says offshore oil in particular is best left alone.
Whether you're focused on the Arctic or on the Atlantic, there's a risk of severe oil spills, and we've seen what happens when we have those major oil spills. The impacts are economically severe, ecologically severe, and they're persistent.
Senator Al Franken, a Minnesota Democrat, repeated an irony he mentioned at a prior energy hearing, that the loss of Arctic ice gives rise to more oil development in the Arctic, which will cause more climate change and more ice loss. This time, Murkowski was ready for it.
Many in the North believe that the irony is that the people of the North would be denied jobs, economic opportunities, the opportunity to access a resource responsibly, safely, to the benefit of the country and national security, while people 4,000 miles away lock up them and put them in an effective snow globe for life.
The senator says she wants to boost all kinds of energy production, hydro, nuclear, petroleum, and renewables.
We have an abundance of supply when it comes to our energy assets. And that's something we're celebrating, because not every country has this.
Murkowski says she's also trying to lift the oil export ban so the U.S. can use that abundance to help its allies. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
It took until day 22 of the 30-day special session for a sexual abuse prevention bill to get a hearing. And when it appeared before the Senate Education Committee today, it was in a radically different form than the original. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports that the changes have upset supporters.
Of the three items on the special session call, legislation known as the Alaska Safe Children's Act, or Aaron's Law, should have been the most straightforward. It's not a multi-billion dollar question like the budget bill or a national level political football like Medicaid expansion. The idea is to establish a sexual abuse prevention program in schools. A version had passed the Senate in the previous legislature, and another passed the House this year with bipartisan support. Four separate versions of the bill had been introduced this year alone. And yet, when a new version was unveiled by the Senate Education Committee, it became much more complicated than that, to supporters' chagrin.
We've taken a well-manicured bill, and we've basically turned it into a junkyard.
Cindy Moore is the mother of Brianna Moore, who was murdered by her boyfriend last summer. Cindy and her husband Butch appeared before the committee to plead with them to move the original version of the bill. The document the committee had substituted had ballooned from 3 pages to 12, rolling in other bills on standardized testing and religious holidays. The new version also included a controversial bill that would prevent school districts from contracting with groups like Planned Parenthood, who provide abortions. Butch Moore said the changes were inappropriate.
To stamp this House Bill 44 with 17 co-sponsors coming out of the House with items included in here of abortion and charter schools and boarding schools and all these other items, this House Bill 44 is designed to do two things. It's designed to protect our children from being molested and raped and sexually assaulted and physically beaten and murdered, like my daughter. That's what this bill is.
Perhaps most significantly, the new version cut to the heart of the original bill by making the establishment of these prevention programs optional. Representative Charisse Millett, an Anchorage Republican and the bill's sponsor, says the changes do not match her original vision for the legislation.
It does basically make the bill a suggestion. It doesn't have any force of law behind it.
Millett says she has not gotten a chance to review many of the significant changes, but it's common for legislators to try to attach their priorities to a moving bill.
You see this a lot, I think, at the end of session when legislators have their bills that haven't made it fully through the process. They look for a vehicle to attach a similar issues onto, that being education, to this bill. To put, you know, to Christmas tree, as they call it, a bill to get their bills passed and signed into law by the governor.
While Millett is not exactly a fan of the changes, she says she will still support it because she does not want to lose momentum on the bill. She also thinks she can eventually strengthen the language instructing schools to teach sexual abuse prevention.
Can we change that down the line? Yes. Do I want to see Alaska Safe Children's Act and statute and then work on making that change from may to shall next session and the sessions to go past? Yes.
Much of the Senate education hearing on the bill focused not on the original bill, but on the new add-ins, which were supported by committee chair and MATSU Republican Mike Dunleavy. Dunleavy was not available for a follow-up interview to explain the changes. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Governor Bill Walker will allow the legislature to leave Juneau and convene the special session in Anchorage this week. His spokesperson, Grace Chang, said in an email that the number one priority is that lawmakers pass a fully funded budget. Walker last month called the special session for Juneau. However, legislative leaders yesterday announced plans to begin holding floor sessions in Anchorage Thursday, citing work on the Capitol as a reason for the move. A memo from the legislature's top attorney says he believes a court would find that lawmakers could not legally convene the current special session outside of Juneau without Walker's agreement. Anchorage Mayor-elect Ethan Berkowitz is developing a plan to transition into his new role. He says the plan will be created by a group of community leaders who will serve as his transition team. They'll also use input from public discussions and town hall-style meetings.
I've helped assemble this tremendous group of Anchorage residents with the idea that if we put together the right ideas at the right time, we can have a profound impact on what happens to our city moving ahead. And I want to make sure that the ideas we have are inclusive. I want them to be innovative. I want them to be good investments for the city.
Berkowitz says the plan will include a timeline with short and long-term goals. Within his transition team are five subgroups that focus on the economy and jobs, homelessness, public safety, administration, and live-work-play. Berkowitz chose three leaders for the team: former Republican state legislator Andrew Halcrow, Joelle Hall with Alaska AFL-CIO, and Siri Vice President of Land and Energy Development Ethan Schutt. They will host four different town hall-style meetings in different areas of Anchorage over the next 6 weeks.
Being mayor is, it can be a solitary job, but this is a community. And in order for us to move the community forward, the mayor's goals need to represent and reflect the community's goals and the community's values. And so it's going to be critically important for the city of Anchorage as we move ahead to have a transition document that reflects the goals of the community at large.
Governor Bill Walker went through a similar process, but Berkowitz's spokesperson says the mayor-elect did not model his transition after the governor's. Berkowitz says the transition team will monitor the progress of his administration after he takes office to ensure that they are meeting the plan's goals. He did not announce any members of his administration. He takes office July 1st. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new weather term to incorporate into your vocabulary, the ridiculously resilient ridge.
And sometimes when these patterns don't move, the ridges and the troughs kind of stay in about the same spot, we get the same surface weather for quite some time.
Sound familiar? Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Wild firefighters are busy responding to new starts as hot, dry, breezy weather continues in the interior. Most of the human-caused fires are being knocked down quickly, but as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, a few are requiring larger responses.
The Bulgin Creek Fire has burned over 500 acres along the Steese Highway between Circle and Central, where Alaska Fire Service spokesman Sam Harrell says it's moving through an area that burned in 2009.
It's just a mishmash of trees all laying down crisscrossed, and all of that heavy fuel on the ground is what's continuing to carry this fire.
Harrell says that's making it tough for the nearly 200 firefighters working to cut line as they try to keep flames away from private property, including Alaska Native allotments and corporation lands. Another focus has been along the Steese Highway, which remains open. The cause of the fire is unknown, but suspected to be human. Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says weather conditions are making it easy for people to accidentally start fires.
Whenever you have, like, equipment, chainsaws, four-wheelers, lawnmowers, grinders. When those things are starting fires, you know, it's just a sign that things are really, really dry.
While most of this spring's wildfires have been human-caused, a few coal seam fires are burning in the Healy area, but as of Tuesday, we're not posing any serious threat. No lightning is in the forecast, but hot, dry weather is expected to continue into the Memorial Day weekend. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Rare thunderstorms in southeast Alaska led the National Weather Service to issue a special marine warning yesterday evening. The warning covered a swath of southeast, roughly from Juneau to the southern tip of Prince of Wales Island. Between about 5 and 6 p.m. Monday, a network of ground sensors detected more than 100 lightning strikes in the affected area and portions of western Canada, says Rick Fritz, the Weather Service's lead forecaster in Juneau.
Boats, of course, very susceptible because by definition, they're out there floating on the water, and they are the high spot.
Fritz says Juneau averages about one thunderstorm every 2 years.
This is kind of interesting because late autumn going into winter is normally when we see thunderstorm activity coming at us from the Gulf.
He says moist air from Canada combined with unusually high ground temperatures, Monday's highs in Juneau were 16 degrees above normal. This caused the atmospheric convection that led to the thunderstorms. Thunder and lightning also caused a brief power outage in Petersburg yesterday afternoon. Odds are you heard at least one person make a crack about moving the Iditarod to Boston this winter. It's the second year Alaska has had a mild winter, while people in the Northeast got hammered. There's a new weather pattern with a funny name that's contributing to some of the mess. KSKA's Monica Gokey has more.
Last week, the National Weather Service unofficially declared this winter as Anchorage's least snowy on record. 4,000 miles away, parts of New England also put this winter down in the record books, but for a record amount of snowfall. Snowy in New England, not so much in Alaska. To top it off, it's been like this for 2 years in a row. Enter the ridiculously resilient ridge. You heard me. I said the ridiculously resilient ridge. That's what some meteorologists are calling a new weather anomaly that's contributing to Alaska's mild winters. The ridge is more or less a clog in the jet stream. Here's meteorologist Dave Snyder of the National Weather Service.
The jet stream is the fast-moving river of air high above the planet that drives all of the weather around the entire globe.
It behaves sort of like a river.
And that superhighway has ridges and troughs, high spots and low spots. And in the low spots is where we find the low pressure, and the high spots is where that more stable pattern is. And that stable pattern has set up across the west coast of the United States a long time during the winter. And that kept us fairly warm. And in the most recent weeks, we've seen that pattern set up once again.
Think of the jet stream like the Glen Highway. There's an accident, traffic is blocked, maybe one lane is sneaking by, but things are pretty much at a standstill. Snyder says that's sort of the atmospheric equivalent of what the ridge does to the jet stream.
And sometimes when these patterns don't move, the ridges and the troughs kind of stay in about the same spot, we get the same surface weather for quite some time.
And that's the resilient part of the ridiculously resilient ridge. Incoming weather systems like storms either fizzle out when they get to the ridge or they ricochet off of it like Plinko chips.
But as long as that ridge is sitting across the West Coast and British Columbia and the Yukon, it more or less puts up a roadblock to any incoming weather.
So what about our friends in New England?
On a global pattern, if you've got warm weather somewhere, you're going to have the opposite or the cooler side of that weather feature somewhere.
NOAA climatologist Rick Toman says the two regions are linked. If Alaska is experiencing a warmer than normal winter, odds are it'll be colder than usual on the East Coast. And while scientists don't completely understand the mechanics of exactly how the atmosphere governs surface weather, there is some emerging consensus that warmer ocean temperatures due to climate change are contributing to changes in atmospheric powerhouses like the jet stream. Down on the ground, that means there's likely more weird weather in the forecast. In Anchorage, I'm Monica Gokey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
A popular yet troublesome ocean monitoring buoy went back in service this spring in southern Kenai Peninsula waters. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has the story of Bandit, the runaway wave buoy that's been out of service for a year and a half.
The Lower Cook Inlet wave buoy is loved and used by many when it decides to stay in one place.
This buoy is affectionately nicknamed Bandit because it's come off its tether multiple times in the past couple of years.
Darcy Dugan is the program manager with the Alaska Ocean Observing System.
Two summers in a row, it came off its chain for reasons we weren't able to completely pin down, but we're guessing that the strong tidal current was one of those reasons. Most recently, we ended up having to take it off its tether because it started to malfunction, and we had to get it fixed and stick it back out. And so we've got our fingers crossed that this time it will stay out there.
So why put an expensive piece of equipment in a rough spot where it's likely to break free? Dugan says the answer lies in the question.
Cook Inlet is a dynamic place, And with the ice and the boat traffic and the currents, we knew it was fairly risky to put it out there. But the need was so great, it was worth the risk.
The buoy is located off the coast of the Southern Peninsula between Homer and Anchor Point. It was first deployed in 2011 and transmits information on wave height and direction, wave period, and water temperature. It's maintained by the Alaska Ocean Observing System, or AOOS, which is one of 11 such organizations around the country. Dugan says they try to identify and fill gaps in ocean monitoring around the state. That's why their motto is Eye on Alaska's Coast and Oceans.
We are under the umbrella of NOAA, but we act as a nonprofit organization. And our mission is to improve access to marine data. So we work with institutions and organizations and groups across the state to pull together information on the coastal and marine environment and produce interactive data tools that the general public can use to get information.
The Cook Inlet buoys data can be accessed three ways online. There's a real-time sensor map through AOOS. The map also provides information from more than 2,000 other weather, wind, and water monitoring stations and webcams around the state. Its information is also on the website of the National Data Buoy Center, through the National Weather Service, and through the Army Corps of Engineers. She says the data is updated every few minutes. And when Bandit the Buoy manages to escape up the inlet and stops transmitting, Dugan says her office always hears about it.
The buoy has a really wonderful group of Homer supporters that check it on a regular basis. And so when the buoy goes down, we get phone calls. But from the perspective of someone managing the buoy, it's great to know that the buoy is in such high demand.
But those rough seas and unpredictable waves that Bandit so dutifully measures are exactly the forces that may make it live up to its adventurous name sometime again in the future. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Explorers Borge Osland and Vincent Collier are skiing the Stikine Ice Field in southeast Alaska and British Columbia. The journey is part of a decade-long project to traverse the world's 20 largest ice fields. So far, they've crossed masses in Patagonia, Chile, and Svalbard, Norway. The two men started skiing on the Stikine Ice Field May 9th. Beforehand, KTOO's Lisa Fu joined them on a trip to the grocery store.
I find Borge Osland and Vincent Collier in the baking aisle of Foodland IGA, standing in front of the oils. Osland says they're looking for sunflower oil for breakfast.
Because we need to boost the porridge with some extra fat, because we need a lot of energy on this trip.
This is something they have to consider that other people normally don't. Does something have enough fat? Osland struggles with this when looking for string cheese. He reads the nutrition stats on several.
So I'll try these ones. Organic cheese strings. 16 of those.
One for each day. Osland says the trip will likely take 12 days, but they're shopping for 16 to be safe. Osland is 52 and from Oslo, Norway. He's done about 30 expeditions that have taken him to places like the North Pole, the South Pole, and the Himalayas. And he does them unsupported. That means no help along the way, no caches of food, even on months-long trips.
The longest trip I've done was when I crossed the Arctic Ocean solo from Siberia to Canada. It took me 83 days.
On that trip, he started out with more than 400 pounds of food and gear, which he carried on his back and pulled on a sled.
That's heavy.
For crossing the Stikine ice field, Osland says they'll each be carrying about 120 pounds.
So this is lightweight, but we still have to be careful and take it seriously and, do the right thing.
The idea behind the long-term expedition is to shed light on how climate change is affecting glaciers. They document their journeys with glacier measurements, notes, and photos. One of their sponsors, National Geographic, outfitted them with a video camera.
And we go out there to show the world what's happening and how it looks like. Because, you can't just draw things on the map or listen and read to scientific reports. Someone has to visualize it. So we're not scientists, but we're the eyewitness to the climate change.
Osland also sees these trips as a way to pass down knowledge to 29-year-old Collier. Collier is from France. He says he first communicated with Osland, who he calls his hero, by email when he was 19.
One day I was harassing him that I really wanted to go on a trip with him on a sailboat around the North Pole. And he said, yeah, okay, we give you a chance.
Since then, Ausland has been Collier's mentor, friend, and expedition partner. Collier says he's learned the importance of preparation and how to be meticulous.
I saw him packing things, and everything is extremely organized. So when you're on the field, you don't think about where's this thing and where's the other.
He's learned it's important to practice the same steps of setting up and packing up camp over and over, even when the weather is nice and calm.
So when it's really windy and you're alone and you want to pitch your tent, you have to make sure that you have a nice procedure, because if you're in the middle, let's say, of an ice cap or Greenland or on the sea ice and you lose your tent is like the only refuge that you have. So you're done. If you lose a tent, you can just call for emergency.
What he's not so sure about at the moment is chocolate. He stands in front of dozens of choices and zeroes in on the milk chocolate Cadbury bar. I suggest the caramel bar.
No, nothing. No liquid inside.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, no liquid.
How about dark chocolate? You're more milk than dark?
Yeah, we need a little more sugar also. So,
He goes back to the milk chocolate Cadbury.
Do you think I can just open one and then I can pay and I can try it?
You must have had Cadbury, no?
Yeah, but not this one.
He opens the wrapper.
Yeah, that will do the job.
Besides chocolate, string cheese, and sunflower oil, Collier and Ausland's carts are filled with nuts, raisins, dry milk, beef jerky, toilet paper, and several bags of potato chips. Those get crushed into crumbs, then packed in individual Ziploc bags. For this trip, Ausland isn't bringing one of his standbys.
Normally I bake a cake, which is almond cake with egg cream, and I bring on the trip to celebrate the small victories, especially on the long trips. You know, there is always something to celebrate, my son's birthday or when I'm halfway or things like that. You need something to look forward to.
Of course, the real motivator is the journey itself, Ausland says, the adventure, finding out what's after the next curve, what's beyond the next ridge. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jeremy Shea and Lisa Fu in Juneau, and Shady Grove Oliver in Homer. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web producer. And I'm Ann Hillman. Have a great evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.